I'm actually donating. A lot of the money ends up going to FARC, a little revolutionary movement in Colombia you might have heard of.
Well, mine actually also goes to FARC, but Drew Curtis is FARC.
Test, 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 test.
Drew Curtis is FARC.
What?
Sleeper.
You remember, it was like that. It was like the Snopes.com. It was like for internet story. What was it?
It was like every 2004 website that was called like freakingexcellent.com. And it's like, here's a gif of John Kerry and George Bush breakdancing. Here's an essay about how much I like beer.
Oh my God.
I tithe a certain portion of my income every month to Turning Point USA.
I'm contributing to Charles Kirk's gum reduction surgery.
It's like, Charlie, we're gonna take that gum line up by an inch or so. You'll be smiling again in no time.
Charles, right now you're at a dolphin, and we're trying to bring you over all the way to a mongoose as far as the amount of real estate your teeth and gums take up, the ratio.
Oh, I've been recording.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, wait, as long as we're talking about Charlie Kirk, do you know like the other thing about him aside from his ridiculously large gum line?
The whole thing
that he is literally the guy from like that Vine, you're just suspecting a future U.S. Army soldier? He said he got like red-pilled to conservatism when he was rejected from West Point because like a WOC like took his spot in the Iraq War or
something.
It
wasn't even West Point. It was just like he tried to enlist in the military. And like if you're trying to enlist in the military during the height of Iraq, like what fucking disease do you have?
It was officer school. It was West Point.
Wait, but let me look this up.
I'm not sure if it was West Point, but it was some sort of officers training school.
And then he was like, "Well, obviously, I can't just join the army and fight in the war in Iraq or Afghanistan
with the grubby privates and such."
Yeah. He's like, I'm not going to just be digging ditches over there. I'm a leader. I'm a born leader.
Charlie, because you're white, we're giving your spot as a second lieutenant to Stella from How Stella Got Her Groove Back. This is the politically correct army.
But, Felix, I like that thing you posted the other day about how, like, the memes that they have on, like, Facebook and Twitter. You're like, I'm really glad someone spent $500 million of dark money on this. Like, because they are so bad.
Yeah, it was – so the meme that I posted was – it was Noam Chomsky being like, yeah, the right in America is more of a threat than ISIS in North Korea. And then it's a black woman like with a uh-huh look on her face going, why don't you move to North Korea then? And it's like fucking nailed it.
Bitch.
Nailed it.
What I love about that meme is that it begins with like a picture of Noam Chomsky next to one of his actual quotes. And then like the counter to it is like an obvious stock photo of just they were like, look up, you know, they were like, oh.
Of a black conservative woman who doesn't exist.
Well, I don't think they just search black conservative woman on like, you know, film stock or whatever, Shutter stock or whatever. They were like a quizzical looking black woman, you know, print done, bought for like, you know, $300 or whatever.
There's actually going to be a splinter in TPUSA from the people who wanted to be a white person, like stay true to their values, and the reformists who wanted a black
woman. Hardliners versus the reformists.
Oh, fucking, Lana Del Raytheon found some of their like earlier memes.
Oh man.
Oh boy, are they racist.
Very extremely racist.
Like it is one where it was just like a picture from like Baltimore or Ferguson of like black teens like standing on top of a cop car or whatever, and like the text was like, ask me again why I need a 30-round magazine.
Oh, Jesus.
Dude, it was really bad.
My favorite genre that they do now, I said this yesterday, is they take a celebrity who has usually never said anything about capitalism or socialism as an economic system and whether they prefer one or the other. Like, one was Kanye, and it was just, Kanye says he hates capitalism, yet he has a yacht. And it's just like, I don't think Kanye's ever spoken out on Marxism or capitalism.
I mean, that's what TCOT used to be until, like, 2015. It used to be, like, inventing quotes by Kanye where he's like... Kanye said that it's harder for him to write his song Piss on a Hoe than to be a cop. Well, this small town police captain wrote an open letter to him, and that used to be all TCOT before they became Pepe's.
Yeah.
I love choosing Kanye too, the guy who's like married to the living avatar of capitalism in America at this point.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No, he hates
how many billions of dollars has she grifted off of 13-year-olds that are fucking app.
More than us.
We're catching up.
Well, we got to get the app going. We got to get an app
where you have to pay like in-app purchases.
Yeah. In-app
purchases
is the key.
Yeah. So you can like your in-app character can wear a Chapo t-shirt. Mm-hmm. That's $30.
You can turn your face into the baseball crank's face. That's $50.
Well, we all got a dream. I guess I should start the show.
Yeah.
Hello, friends. It's your premium Chapo episode for this week. And it's a special one because it's the OG crew. It's the OG Dry Boys, me, Matt, and Felix, with Brendan on the ones and the twos on the boards doing production. And it's also special for me because this is the first episode of the show we've recorded in my new apartment. So this is like smashing a bottle of champagne over the head of the ship's captain before it goes down.
Looking through the webcam, I now know that both Felix and Will have that suspended microwave over the oven, which is way fancier than anything I've ever had, so I feel deeply alienated from everyone.
Oh, man, if you think that's fancy, you should see some of the lawn jockeys that Will has in there. I don't even get there, and you didn't even put them outside. What's the point?
No, they're just in my bedroom window all lined up. I like to have them look at me, and I like to say hello to them every morning. Okay, let's see if that makes it into the cut. No.
I think that's going to be the thing where one quarter of it makes it into it, and then you just hear a cut, and people are like, oh, I guess I had audio troubles.
No, actually, anytime I make any edit now, people are like, why did you silence me? It was probably really good. I'm like, sometimes I just need to cut a little bit. I just need to tighten up some silence.
One time I got mad at you for cutting because I thought you cut me out of the Adam Curtis thing, but then you were like, no, Adam actually requested to cut that out.
Yeah.
I was like, what? I thought it was good.
It wasn't because of you. It wasn't because of you.
The interview was quite good, gentlemen, but you think you could just cut out that one fellow who had brain damage?
That mongoloid who seemed to be in the room.
So we got a few things to discuss on today's show, and then in the second half we're going to be answering your questions on Curious Cat. We're doing another pre-taped call-in show, so if you're hearing this right now, find the link, go to Curious Cat, send us your questions, and it'll be too fucking late, but send them anyway because they won't be answered. They won't be answered. It's too late. But yeah, we'll be getting some listener feedback.
You should have sent them during the episode on pet care. You wanted them heard now.
But before we get into the few news items of the week, I gotta ask Matt. Now, we all saw Wonder Woman last week, and then usually, like on our movie episodes, we all go to see movies together and then laugh about them and make fun of them. However, Matt, so you sometimes freelance on your own as sort of our like independent movie crash dummy, like when you went to see Boss Baby and reported back on it.
Film Ronin.
Well, the Boss Baby thing was basically my friend and I were in New York. It was hot as hell, and we were like, fuck it, let's just go into the theater. And Boss Baby sounded like good irony, but I make it a point to see every Transformers movie in the theater.
Woo! So you saw the new Transformers.
I have seen three of the five of them alone. Including this. I take it seriously. Like, it's my – I'm bearing witness. I am the Victor Klemperer of American cinema. My job is to see what the zeitgeist is because in my opinion – and I had this realization shortly after the last one came out, after I watched this insane – 2.5 hour, $200 million, just eye molestation. I realized that every empire in history has hyper exploited their peripheral subjects in order to build grotesquely expensive monuments to their own power.
Hmm.
And the Egyptians had the pyramids, and the Romans had triumphal arches, and the American Empire has the Transformers movies. Like, they've cost at this point probably $1 billion. You know, and that money is obviously coming from squeezing blood from the stones of the world proletariat so that they can make these just grotesque, mind-destroying spectacles. But, of course, the great irony is that now they are less pitched towards American audiences than they are to the godless Chinese communists, which was certainly true of the last one, which had one of my favorite scenes ever. There's a scene in the last Transformers movie where the Transformers are fighting in Hong Kong, and they cut to a Chinese government official from the central government saying, "We must protect the city," and that's it. Like, he's never in the movie before or after. The Viacom, multi-billion-dollar capitalist entity Viacom, spent millions of dollars to put like a solid 30 seconds of unalloyed propaganda for the Chinese Communist Party in a movie. It's amazing. There's none of that in this one, though. There's no Chinese pandering in this one. So instead, like, it's just insane retconning of world history.
To be clear, the film is Transformers: The Last Night. This is the new Transformers movie.
Yeah.
What, like, and then the I think the things that we all picked up on is this, like, that it's like Transformers throughout history and mythology.
Yeah.
So you got to fill us in.
Okay, well, all right. Well, one of the things I love about the Transformers movie in the era of the Marvel expanded universe concept, where every movie is just a pitch for the next movie and they try to maintain a through line of canon and continuity, every single Transformers movie starts from scratch in terms of what the actual lore is. Like, they don't give a fuck about anything that came before it. Like, it's like, no, you thought that Energon Cube created the Transformers? Wrong. It was this CGI lady from history. Like, they don't care. And I kind of like that, because now every movie is just, okay, did you see the last one? Have you done your homework and all that shit? Now they're just like, fuck it. We're just going to riff on whatever. So in this one, even though in previous iterations of the movie they've talked about how Transformers were created when we killed the dinosaurs, I think. That was in the last one.
I remember they were fighting cavemen in one of them.
Yeah, that was in the last one. And there was one where Transformers landed on the moon in the 60s, and that's why they sent the Apollo missions there, was to get them. That was in the third one. But this – and there's one where they built the pyramids. That's the second one. But and then the first one, they just land in the present day, and they had never been here before. So they just change it every time. And this time, the Transformers hooked up with King Arthur in 500 AD and helped him fight off the Saxons.
Why?
Because he was a symbol of, like, humans' greatest possibilities. Like, King Arthur's court was what human civilization could be.
Okay.
And the hordes, the barbarian hordes were, like, evil and, chaos.
Uh-huh.
And so then they went into hiding after that, but they maintained this, there's this order of, like, people descended from King Arthur's knights who keep his memory, who, like, keep up the history of them. It's sort of like the Knights Templar, kind of.
Okay.
Or like in the Da Vinci Code, where instead of the blood of Jesus, they're protecting the secret of the Transformers. And the Transformers will, like, hook up with them through history and help them with stuff. And this is all explained by Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah, Anthony Hopkins, like, the last Knights Templar?
He is the last sort of keeper of the lore, yes.
Okay, all right.
He's this British lord, and he's got this room full of portraits of all of the people in history who are part of this group. And it includes people like, you know, Leonardo, Da Vinci, and Michelangelo, and Columbus, and Harriet Tubman, and Frederick Douglass.
Okay, that's what I needed to ask about, because, like, I saw the clip that said in like a little news item about how the latest Transformers movies, the Transformers help Harriet Tubman in the Underground Railroad.
Well, they don't show it or anything, which would have been amazing. They just show her. They kind of imply it. They imply that she knew about Transformers, and presumably they helped her.
They were involved with the worst railroad. There was a certain Transformer in Central Europe who transformed into a train.
Well, no, they actually show a scene in World War II where Bumblebee transforms from a Jeep to attack a Nazi mansion, sort of like Dirty Dozen.
Okay, my favorite thing about this history retconning, like the idea that the Transformers, who are, you know, incredibly futuristic giant robots who can, like, change their arms into, like, cannons or helicopters and shit, were aware of the Underground Railroad and the injustices of slavery, but, like, did very little to stop
it. Well, yeah, and they also fought in World War II, but didn't stop the Holocaust from happening.
Well, they had already gotten a contract with the Nazi government to transform into trains and gas chambers. They were like, well, we can't break the contract. Like, it's
The Decepticons are transforming into trains.
Yeah.
And the,
that would have been interesting if they had sort of created this, like, alternative history where all human conflict was basically a proxy war between Decepticons and Autobots. That would have been interesting, but it's never that clear. Because
Optimus Prime,
you know, it was written by 15 people, all like whacked out on coke in two
Optimus
weeks.
Prime transformed into Fat Man and Little Boy and helped us end the war by demolishing Hiroshima and Nagasaki in a flash.
Yeah. But the last knight is actually Mark Wahlberg.
Oh, okay.
Of course. All right, yeah.
Cool. Spoiler alert.
I also love that Anthony Hopkins is in this movie. It's sort of like he got this
He's been in some shit.
He's been in some bad movies, but like...
Well, yeah, but you know what? Here's the thing. And this is actually... I realized this a while... It's with the last Transformers movie, actually, is that Michael Bay has a few genuine strengths as a director. And one of his most consistent abilities is to get good actors who are just collecting a paycheck to actually, like, not phone it in. Like, if you look at his movies throughout his whole career, you see these actors who have every reason to just show up and punch the clock, but they're actually good. Like, Stanley Tucci in the last one is fantastic. Like, look at Buscemi in Armageddon versus Buscemi in Con Air, which looks like a Michael Bay movie, but it's not a Michael Bay movie. He's like sleepwalking through Con Air, but he's like a live wire in Armageddon. And that's true of all those movies. And that's true of Hopkins. Like, Hopkins is like De Niro at this point. He shows up, he hits his mark, he mumbles his lines, and he's out of there. But he's like all zesty and fucking froggy in this movie. He's like saying, yo, bitch. It's amazing.
I'd love to piss on that hoe. That bitch got fucked. So I
that
talk
is
about
not at all far from the dialogue that they have Sir Anthony Hopkins saying in this movie.
I was talking with Nick about this last week, about Michael Bay and like the new Transformers movies, and he had the idea that like for the next one, like you know they spend this obscene amount of money for these huge action sequences. He had the I think brilliant idea that like they should just pay the city of Detroit like the equivalent of the budget to have him actually demolish downtown Detroit and have like a real Autobot like just stomp through the historic Ford Theater or something. I mean, it would look amazing.
That would be, and Trump would absolutely eminent domain Detroit to do that. Like no question.
Or like the Chinese.
Yeah, I mean, they have acres and acres of condemned buildings in Detroit that just sit there because they don't have the money to pull them down. Literally. So if you just dropped a 6-ton robot on them instead,
yes.
For free, who would say no to that?
Either that, or just bribe the Chinese government so that he can have like a Constructobot turn into a giant wrecking ball and just put a hole in the Great Wall of China.
It sounds like if you showed this movie to Trump, he would believe that Transformers have existed historically.
Oh yeah, he would.
Like no question,
folks. I'm getting Jared on this. Okay, we're going to have him investigate where these Transformers are coming from.
I am the only one Optimus Prime will talk to. Believe me, he respects me. I've talked to him as both a truck and a robot.
Now that we have the president, I'm looking forward to the next Transformers movie because everyone except this one, which was made during the transitional period, really, they all have, like, the president has a lot to do. And they say him by name. Like, they actually have George Bush in the first one. Like, he's a character in the first Transformers movie. And then they have, like, Obama on TV doing a speech in the subsequent ones that were came out during the Obama years.
Obama has a special limo Transformer.
Trump into the Transformers mythos is something I'm really looking forward to in the future.
Well, I think that's a perfect segue into... You want to do Jared first or talk about healthcare?
Jared first.
Let's do Jared first, because this is a good segue about... Trump and the Autobots. This is,
Palestinians are the Decepticons.
Yeah. This is a news item that I saw just the other day, and I thought it'd be perfect to bring up on the show. We all know how Jared Kushner, Trump's son-in-law, has been put in charge of modernizing all the U.S. government to make it run as smoothly as a business, and also Iraq and peace in the Middle East. He's got a full plate.
And we've almost taken back Mosul. Coincidence?
I think not. I just saw this news item the other day, and I had to mention it on the show. This is from The Hill. The headline is, Palestinians disappointed after, quote, tense meeting with Kushner. And I was just, like, wondering, like, what the fuck must that have been like? I mean, it's still so funny to me that this callow real estate moron is in the room with, like, the Palestinian Authority and just, like, apparently, a boss, you know, again, another callow figurehead who's pretty bad in his own right, was just like really angry because apparently Jared just got in there and just gave him all of the Netanyahu government's talking points.
What it is, is that every piece of pop culture ephemera from the 90s explains the current moment. We live in a 90s Pauly Shore movie where the crass, horny president played by Rodney Dangerfield sends his shithead son-in-law played by Pauly Shore to the Middle East to solve the problem. That's the world we live in.
And then, like, you know, like he gets in the room and they're like, oh, never. And then, like, the door opens and, like, you know, fucking Abbas comes out on a skateboard and he's like, hang ten, dude.
Yeah, that's our world.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so, yeah, Jared did not go over well with the Palestinians. But, like, I mean, let's be honest, like, who the fuck would? Like what school are we going to send over there to, like?
If you can't send a practically retarded 30-year-old who just his only job in before this appeared to be to borrow money.
Yeah.
Like, who can you send?
Oh, this is – oh, my God. Felix, you caught this last week, but, like – okay, so the other – remember Brett Stevens had another New York Times column where they're paying him to write about how he's leaving Twitter. Yeah. They're paying him article. For a fucking Medium post about how people are too mean to him online. And this comes like a couple weeks after his – where he just reprinted a commencement address that said that people are too sensitive and, like, you know, safe spaces are bad. But he's like, I've been – told to eat an asshole one too many times, so I bid you good day.
And sir, I will not be filling your hole.
Shout out to Libby Watson, who, you know, Stevens gave an interview to the Daily Beast saying that her comment in particular, when she called him a twat on Twitter, like, made him rethink, you know, I didn't know the young people were so mean. So that's a friend of the show
In that thing, he said, I'll be coming back, you know, from time to time to, you know, talk about music that I like. But from here on in, my assistant will be, you know, and again, that's his personal assistant who probably the Times is also paying in lieu
while
of another journalist.
Off actual reporters who are doing shit about labor and climate and politics and shit. They're paying someone probably a pretty good salary, to read Brett Stevens' Twitter for him.
But they also have to be buried alive with Stevens when he dies.
That's true. Yeah. But no, like, okay, so I'm Brett or his assistant, if you like, I don't know if it's still up, but we caught a glimpse of it in his likes column at the very top of it. Brett Stevens' account liked a tweet from Pat Dollard, who is like the absolute psychopath, who, like, he was this former Hollywood producer, used to work with Steven Soderbergh, who's like a meth addict, who was like alt-right before that was a thing, and like went to Iraq and thought he was a Marine and shit.
Yeah,
and, like,
he's actually one of the premier valor thieves of all time.
Yeah, yeah. He wears fatigues all the time, but just like to go into an air-conditioned room and be like, Muslim rape gangs are double.
He was a proto alt-right guy who I think his timing was off. If only he had, like, not done meth that early and like, you know, like he could have hit the crest as it was happening. Anyway, so at the top of the Brett Stevens New York Times account's likes is a Pat Dollard tweet where it's a video of Jared talking about monetizing the government, and Pat's comment was, listen to Jared's gay little nerd voice. So he literally called Jared little homie gay ass, and Brett Stevens or his assistant apparently liked that tweet.
Dad, you have to call a meeting with the New York Times. They've used your best weapon against me and called me little homie gay ass. Tell them Rand is little homie gay ass.
Easter egg from the Wonder Woman episode for the premium subscribers is that at one point during the movie, the doddering prime minister was sort of like flubbering as he was trying to explain his peace position. He was going, no, but sir, we did. And Felix just leaves up and goes, Data, no.
Data, do not write an open letter saying I'm little homie gay ass.
Well, we were also thinking that, like, in the room with the Palestinian Authority, like, a boss or someone just, like, leans over and says...
Oh, I actually have the translation. Shout out to our boy Ali. Came through with the phonetic translation here. Let me just pull it up. Sorry, we can edit this.
The phonetic Arabic translation of little homie gay ass.
Lute.
Okay. Wow, that's short.
Yeah, it's like...
What a poetic language.
Well, I mean, I guess that's like a term of endearment over there. Like, in Arabic, we don't say, I love you. We say, lute, which means you're my little homie gay ass, which I think is more beautiful.
Ah, that is beautiful.
Yeah.
So that's the news of Jared for the week. The bad Jared, not the good one. And Brett Stevens. So, wow, those are two turkeys with one stone.
Brett Stevens, how does he look different in every photo of him? Have you noticed that?
Well, he either has his little already gray but also very peach fuzz-like beard. He either has that or he doesn't. Yeah. And then he either has his hair swept away or he has it kind of like this boyish like haircut like he's 13.
Now, I can't fully claim credit for this. Libby deserves all the credit for getting him off Twitter, but I do notice that in his official New York Times portrait, he does have a beard. All I'm going to say, he did that after I personally challenged him to grow facial hair.
Yeah.
And take off his sort of old-timey
child's... But is that one of those dots? Oh, no, the New York Times...
Yeah, it's not Wall Street Journal. It's an actual photo. I challenged him to grow a beard and take off his old-timey little sailor outfit and hold up a lollipop the size of his head.
I was just picturing in the Wall Street Journal when he heard you say that, and then he went and he just, with a permanent marker, just did more dots on his portrait.
But the other news item of note that I wanted to get to this week is just the ongoing... abomination of this pending healthcare legislation that the Republicans are doing. It's in the Senate now. It's called like the Better Healthcare Act or the Senate Healthcare
Art
Bill
of the
or
deal,
whatever.
Baby. Nailed yeah. It. Yeah. This is called the No One Gets Sick Act. You don't want to vote against that, do you?
It's just like, I think as it currently stands now, they've punted the vote till after the 4th of July holiday. There are still some holdouts like Suzanne Collins, I think, of Maine and a couple other
Dan
people.
Heller. Dan Heller is pretty much a solid no because he's the only Republican senator who's up for re-election in 2018 in a state that went for Hillary.
Okay.
So I don't think that – I mean, apparently Sheldon Adelson is really mad at him, but I don't think he's going to budge because he knows that he'd be fucking done for if he voted for it.
Yeah.
But the rest of these fucking ghouls, they don't give a shit. And that's what's scary to me about this because this bill – is the kind of thing that you're never supposed to be able to do in politics because it's just too much of a poison pill. It's too much of a blatant fuck you to everyone who would have to vote for you. This is the kind of thing, this is like a third rail thing. They're cutting Medicaid and Medicare. This is the kind of thing that they're just supposed to be too scared to ever try. And they're like totally willing to do it. And I'm saying that like even with them pushing it back, they're probably 50-50 to pass this fucking thing, which is really sobering and terrifying to think of because it means that they're not scared.
Yeah.
It means that they have no fear. It means that they're betting that after 30 years of immiseration and social atomization, we've rendered the electorate completely docile. Only the most tribal partisans bother to vote, certainly in midterms, and we all know who those people tend to be. And any of the stray rabble who might want to go out there and show their discontent, well, their vote can be suppressed and gerrymandered away from being a threat. And it helps that their opposition is totally disorganized and completely fucking discredited. I mean, if the midterms are nationalized and it becomes a question of like Trump versus Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, a lot of people are just going to shrug their shoulders. And that means that the old psychopaths are going to be the only people who vote or the only people whose votes get counted.
And just, yeah, like to your point, Matt, the sheer brazenness of how unbelievably awful this bill is. I mean, it's just taking away the health insurance of millions of people to fund a giant tax cut for like the wealthiest, most atavistic people in our society.
It's so out in the open. They are blatantly saying the most vulnerable of you will die so that the richest of you can build fuckbots made out of juiceros. Like they're just telling you that. I mean, we had that episode with Peter Fraze that sadly got eaten by the computer, and we talked about his book that puts out four possible futures that we could see in Western society based on technological and ecological factors. And the last one he talks about is eliminationism. And that's where capitalism deals with declining resources and technological stagnation by systematically liquidating the lower classes with targeted deprivation and military repression. And this act honestly feels like it's the starting gun of an eliminationist policy.
Well, I mean, I think part of it is that just no compunction about causing the deaths of over a period of a few decades, millions of people. I mean, this is sort of the policy nationwide. Bruce Rauner, our horrible governor in Illinois, just sort of he's playing chicken with the budget and is fine with the government not being funded. And so there's no funding for emergency services. Like no one will be able to call 911 in Illinois if this bill doesn't pass. But I think the other thing is, like, GA06 was a big thing because it wasn't so much that Ossoff lost. It was that the entire party focused their attention on this one race that is – that's supposed to be the strategy, right? You have these purple districts. You have these moderate people who don't have to hold their nose running for Trump and just won't come out. But the way that the resources were allocated, it was they had that ad where Ossoff is texting and he's like just telling some person in the text like, I believe in responsible spending. And it's like if the entire party was focused against me on like somewhat of a vulnerable district, the kind that their strategy focuses on, and the best they could come up with was screenshots of a guy texting about earmark reform. Like, yeah, I would be like, well, you know, the party's in this rough spot because this retarded guy that we didn't think would become president became president. And there's a split between his base and the moneyed interest. But if we pass this austerity thing, it will sort of will give him a big triumph. But I think there's a lot to be said about the sort of feckless and incompetent opposition.
Oh, God, it's so awful. And the thing is that they're still obsessed with contrasting this nightmare bill with the fucking ACA.
Yeah.
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 But the thing is, everyone hates that. And it's a proven electoral loser. Everybody fucking hates Obamacare. And yes, obviously, there's no arguing at all. This bill being proposed is a billion times worse. But if you're contrasting a present shitty situation with a future hypothetically worse situation, how is that supposed to get anybody to give a shit?
Not only that, but like the other thing I've been noticing, like as far as like the Democratic leadership in the Senate or and House is going, like a lot of their criticisms of the AHCA and the way the Republicans are handling this is all based on these kind of procedural grounds. Like they're just talking about how unfair it is and how hypocritical the Republicans are given everything they did to stop Obamacare from happening, right?
Yeah, and it's just like, oh yeah, that's hypocrisy just like, is the only crime because you can point it out, and because it's nonpartisan, it doesn't have any kind of policy implications to it.
And it's like, who gives a shit? Based. And like, they're right. Of course the Republicans are being hypocritical, but like, that's their prerogative. They're in power. They understand that you have power. You use it no matter against – it doesn't fucking matter if it's fair or not. You use power to enact your agenda no matter what. And to the voter – when a voter hears like, you know, the supposed opposition be making these arguments on, you know, analytical or procedural grounds about how it's not fair – what they hear, and rightly so, is just the Democrats just throwing up their hands and going, well, there's nothing we can do.
Right. They sound – people – one of the reasons people don't like liberals – I mean, people touch on smugness and stuff like that all the time. But they read as fucking losers to people.
Oh, it's whining. You're whining to the refs.
Yeah. And the – I mean, that sort of goes into the policy discussion that's here. Yeah, people want to keep a lot of the improvements with Obamacare, but – the more tangible that a government, some sort of government program has affected your life, the harder it is to take it away. I mean, they had in the UK, they had this barrage of New Labour scumbags and Tories, and they really harmed the NHS through privatization efforts, but they couldn't take it away because it was something people could point to and go, no, that makes my life better. That is a direct government program that I cannot imagine my life without. And with this, you know, we've talked about the 50-50 shot of passing it. Yes, it is. Obamacare is absolutely an improvement on what we had before. But to a lot of people, what can they specifically point to and go like, this made my life better? I want to keep this thing where I have to go on the confusing website and have to buy my plan. It's fucked up and it's not tax deductible for some reason. It's a nightmare for a lot of people. So even with the improvements, it'll be hard to take away. It will be hard for people to make a positive case for defending it.
Well, that's the thing. That is why this has been so actually useful. This whole process has been so useful in showing how many powerful Democrats – are genuinely hostile to single payer and universal healthcare, regardless of what they say. Like, they, who gives a shit what they say? We know that they're opposed to it. Look at what happened in California. Oh, we can't do universal healthcare.
They have a super majority.
That's gibberish. And like, I'm mildly skeptical of state based approaches to single payer, but
can't
if any
money,
state can do it, it's California. And they just killed it. Because they got a bunch of money from health insurance companies. It's not that complicated. And the thing that really shows you that they are full of shit, the thing that like cuts through all of their claims to look, we want single payer. We want universal healthcare. But we have to be realistic. We have to confront the world that we live in, not in your fantasies, you goddamn Bernie bro pixie dust snorters. Is that this? Okay, they want to defend the USACA. Well, what does that mean? It means that, like, if this fails, if this bill fails, so what does the ACA, what does defending the ACA require? It means basically fighting off Republican attempts to undermine it with funding, because they've been underfunding a lot of the elements of the ACA for over a year now. That's one of the big reasons that the Obamacare, there was that big announcement of Obamacare premium raises right before the election, is because they basically nuked the risk corridor element of it by underfunding it in Congress. And they're going to keep doing that even if they can't pass this bill and basically force something to happen. So how do you beat that? Well, it's very simple. The only way to do it is to change the composition of Congress. There's no other way to do it. So it's an electoral remedy. And I think everyone agrees that that's what it is. Well, if that's how you defend the ACA, how are you going to do that? By running in the midterms on an Obamacare system that everyone doesn't like, even the people who think it's better than the alternative do not have any genuine passion for? Or do you run on single payer, something that polls incredibly well, even among fucking Republicans, and that is simple and easy to understand? It doesn't require any discussion of tranches and like risk pools or any of that shit. It's like, you know how your grandpa has Medicare? Well, you'd have it too. That's, you're done. You've explained it.
Love you, Grandpa.
Which is easier and which is better to run on in a midterm? There's no question. I mean, if anyone argues against that, they're being disingenuous. So if you accept that premise and you're still against it, then you're not being strategic. You're not being clever. You're not being a savvy political operator.
Yes.
You're just opposed to single payer.
Yeah. And what is the realistic pragmatic component here? Well, we lost everything by running on an extension of the last 8 years, so we have to do that to win.
Yeah,
it just, you worship pragmatism so hard that you don't know even what you're being pragmatic for anymore.
And I love all the fucking drum they keep beating, or at least that they beat throughout the election, is that they were going to get moderate Republicans. Those people are out there, yep. And we're going to go after those.
Yep.
And yet, as Matt just said, I don't know if they're moderate Republicans, but a lot of Republicans like single payer. But suddenly they're not interested anymore in getting the Republicans off of the other side to, you know, get excited about something Democrats could possibly offer them. They don't care anymore about those Republicans.
What was their appeal to moderate Republicans? It was fucking John Ossoff going, well, you know, what if we had a balanced budget? Yeah. Do you think that's what? How many millions of people like that are in the country that only vote on the budget deficit?
To my earlier point about like you can't just whine to the refs and make complaints about like procedural grounds or the Republicans are being hypocrites or whatever. To a certain extent, the Democrats can't do anything. Okay, the Republicans have them by the balls and they can basically do what they want. The Democrats, I think they should try a lot harder to fuck things up and just gum up the works and be as much of a nuisance as possible.
As they did to defend a no-fly list,
right?
Of all things.
Okay, but like to that point, the one thing they can do, and Matt, you're exactly right, is forcefully and articulately lay out a different vision of society and a different vision for healthcare in particular that addresses people's needs, and do it loudly and do it every fucking time there's a camera or a microphone in front of your face from now until 2020.
Is that Jeremy Corbyn's music I'm hearing? Yeah. Release a manifesto that people like and then turn popular opinion against a horribly incompetent
like,
and evil
highlight
government?
How evil and horrible, like make a moral case. For as bad as they are, the Republicans understand that politics is about competing moral visions for society. I would say that they represent the single most immoral aspects of our society and the most corrupt and atavistic impulses that exist in our society. But they understand that it's a moral vision and they make a moral argument when they present their policies. I mean, they present it to like the worst people in our country, but I there are more better people than bad people. They just need something to believe in and something to hold on to about their future. And right now, as we said millions of times before, the Democrats ain't cutting it. However, to her credit, I did notice that Elizabeth Warren did say the Democrats should run on single payer going forward.
Yeah, I don't love Elizabeth Warren. You can't avoid this in national politics, but very hard into AIPAC and a lot of other things. But like someone could win.
And she
on that
also
platform.
She also made the point, which again I've been banging my head against the wall over and over again, arguing with Democratic Party or like Hillary and Obama people, she made the obvious point that the ACA was a conservative think tank policy. They went with the conservative market-based option for ACA. She says
another way you could bludgeon the Republicans is by painting Obamacare, despite the fact that it passed under him, and say, you know what? This is actually conservative. And just tarnish that word more. Go, this is a conservative bill. You don't actually like conservatism if you hate Obamacare.
No, they can't do that because it's all based on teams. And that's like besides the venal need to protect the insurance industry, which animates a lot of the sort of democratic structural opposition among like individuals who don't necessarily have that same. If you don't have that material incentive, you argue, well, it's Obama's. He's our guy. We love him. Do you want to see his legacy ended? And for a lot of people who treat politics as like, you know, this game where you like pick a side and then you just love them, they find that persuasive for some reason.
One reason I always wanted us to do a House of Cards episode because it
it
animates the other delusion of these Obama and Hillary Democrats that they're actually cunning, brilliant Machiavellian manipulators. When in fact, the entire story of the last 8 years and how we got here and how we got there in the 30 years before is a constant story of Democrats obsessed with partnering up with people who will always betray them. Whether it's bringing this Heritage Foundation healthcare bill to the House and saying, well, you know, this is a market-based solution, and then having it completely underfunded and rat-fucked and kind of doomed to begin with because it hinges on a market that is the problem. Or it's Hillary's moderate Republicans, or it's bringing Michael Bloomberg to the DNC and, you know, comes out last week says we should support Trump. Hillary's, you know, all the neocons that they lined up with, Robert Gates. There are so many examples of Democrats making
the Kagan family, Max Boot,
all these people who always betray them, always fuck them in the end, and always help them kick them further out of power. They are obsessed with partnering up with because they think they are making this brilliant coalition. Oh, well, if I get some right wing elements, they can't possibly fight against me. But every fucking time, they're Charlie Brown with the football. And all this shit that we're preached to about pragmatism and everything, it's already disgusting because why do you enter the negotiation table with your compromise? But it's especially disgusting because look at the world. Everything, every reason why you said you had to do this turned out to – it happened anyway. It fucking happened anyway.
And Felix, to that point, and like this is like sort of the larger thing that I keep coming back to again and again, is like I hear from like the – we were talking with Sarah Jones just last week about the hashtag resistance. And like the people in the Democratic Party who, you know, we're slamming our heads against the wall, and like the line that they keep coming back to is like, look, like, you know, the Republicans are the villain. Like, they're the bad guy. They're the clear and immediate threat. Like, why are you wasting your time, like, attacking us? Let's work together to defeat, like, the real threat, which is the right. And, like, I agree. They, like, the right wing, Republicans in control of our government, that's the problem. They are the enemy. However, to the pragmatists out there and the people who don't like purity in politics, yes, let's come together, but get this through your fucking head. You must bend the knee to us, not the other way around.
Right.
You have been proven as failures, and your entire worldview has been discredited. You bend the knee to us, and then let's fucking work together to defeat these things, not with fucking means testing or market-based solutions, but with a powerful social democratic message like what just happened in the UK. So bend the knee, and we can make up and work together, but not fucking before then.
Yeah. And we're retreading some territory we went through with Corbyn. But I think so. The most instructive thing for the next Sanders, the next Warren, it should be that look at where your party is. Everything that they're going to try to throw against you, you don't have to acquiesce to them. You don't have to do what they do with Republicans. These people are paper tigers. If you do not play by the rules of their game, and this is more life and death than ever, because if you don't run them over, if you don't put them through the fucking meat grinder, shove their noses in the mess they made on the carpet, they will try to elect 435 fucking John Ossoffs, eat shit, and then sell you a t-shirt saying, hey, at least we tried.
And one last point about purity politics, because that is a favorite buzzword of these people. Look, I'm not for purity politics. I don't think like a Bernie Sanders would have won in that Georgia district, has been gerrymandered to be like the most reactionary white district imaginable. However, single-payer health care, universal health care, that is a purity test for everyone in the Democratic Party. You're either for it or against it, and if you're against it, get the fuck out. That like that is an absolute line in the sand, and that is a purity test that should be enforced ruthlessly.
The opposite of purity is poison. And so,
we're all right now, by the way. It's mud. It's mud. It's mud. Mud politics. Yeah.
Folks, if you don't test your representatives' haplo groups, like, get out of here.
Haplogroups.
Oh, did I fuck that up too?
No. I'm just saying that's the voice that I hear in my head when I haplogroups.
Is it haplogroups or haplogroups?
No, who cares?
I think it's haplogroups.
Yeah.
God damn it.
I mean, I don't care, but
whatever they are, they're stupid.
We're gonna answer your questions in just a second, but like, you know, we've been talking about healthcare or whatever. A major part of any like healthcare reform, I mean, you know it, I know it, it has to be mindset.
Yeah.
Oh, any healthcare plan that 100%. Doesn't address mindset and posture and self-talk is doomed to fail. I mean, you're not going to be healthy.
Yeah.
The point of healthcare is to have a healthy, active, positive population. If you don't control your mindset and control your emotions and self-talk, then you're not going to be healthy.
That's why my dad isn't with us today. He didn't do breathing exercises. He didn't do Wim Hof ice therapy. Yeah, I love you, Dad. I wish, but you were wrong.
Folks, longtime fans of the show will know, of course, I'm referring to, you know, the god, our mentor, our sort of spiritual advisor in a lot of way, Mike Cernovich, of course.
My motherfucking Cernovich.
Yesterday, let's just say the audiobook of Guerrilla Mindset found its way onto my hard drive. And wouldn't you know it, Mike reads this book himself. For
that
like five
is amazing
hours.
To me. That honestly, I fucking tip my cap to that. The level of delusional self-confidence when you sound like Sylvester the fucking cat and you decide, I'm going to read my own book. Balls, man.
I was.
I doffed my cap to him as well.
I was absolutely.
Earlier this year, I was like in talks with people to do this like MMA documentary for SB Nation, and they were like, Do you want to narrate it? And I'm like, yeah, let me just, yeah, for like an hour of narration, let me have my millennial vocal fry voice. People will love that. But Cernovich, a far more confident man than me, that's amazing. He's an amazing man for being like, yes, who else would do it?
Would it fall because they wouldn't get you Morgan Freeman, Felix?
I actually wanted the pro Hezbollah singer Julia Boutros, the voice of an angel.
We were in a cafe yesterday working on some stuff, and Will got this audiobook, and we started to play it out loud through his speakers in the cafe, and I was really terrified that we were just driving this woman next to us insane. Yeah. But then after we were done, she introduced herself and said she was a huge fan of the show. So that I was almost certain.
I thought we were like torturing everyone else in this like cafe.
Well, everyone but her.
Yeah, we were definitely making.
No, she's got good mindset, good posture. Yeah, exactly. She was very alpha female.
We're not as bad in public as we used to be. Like when we remember. When we kept watching Seagal movies, and every time we'd go anywhere, we'd be like, this is what we call motherfucking rehearsal.
By the way, there is a new one on Netflix, and I hope everyone's been saving it.
Oh, we saved it for you, buddy.
We saved it for you, buddy.
Remember when you were in JFK flying to Pittsburgh and we were just watching Benzino videos?
And then, like, right as we got on the plane, Benzino was like, yo, you fucking worms.
Okay, so right now, for Matt and Felix and for the listeners, I'm just going to select at randomly just a clip from hour one of Mike Cernovich reading Guerrilla Mindset, and we're going to play it for you on the air. Just a quick hit, because I want to share this with you, the listeners. So let's go. Hold on one second.
When walking, it isn't something most of us are usually aware of. For example, we walk and we tend to land on our heels, and then we kind of fall forward, and then we kind of propel ourselves forward, so we're kind of off balance, but we don't really know what we do. But that's not actually the best way to walk. The way you want to walk is to be more on the balls of your feet. So you want to start walking.
Oh, really?
Okay, I'm pausing.
Way.
I'm pausing it. That was Mike explaining walking. That was Mike explaining walking. I'm going to jump back and jump ahead. I'm just going to select another random audio sample. Okay, here we go.
Because blank. It could be anything. Again, it doesn't matter. I'll give you an example. I'm going to go warm up my brain before work because I enjoy having clarity of thought and intense focus. Or I might say, I'm going to take a contrast shower because I want to feel invigorated. I'm going to get out of bed rather than hit the snooze button because I'm tired of being passive about life. Write out your affirmations. Type them out or write them out. It will make them more believable. It'll also put body to your thoughts. Your affirmation could even be an essay. For example, I'll read you the essay that I use. It's my own affirmation on life.
Yes.
I call it, I will. Maybe this, maybe that. Maybe I'll be a contender. Mr. Maybe is the ultimate seducer. Mr. Maybe will whisper things in your ear. Tell you maybe you can. Maybe you can't. Maybe this is too hard. Maybe it won't work. Committing to Mr. Maybe is easy because it requires no risk. You can rationalize anything. But later in life, you're going to say, I could have been a contender. I could have done something. I don't listen to Mr. Maybe. There is no maybe. There is no might. There is no, that sounds interesting. You're either in or you're out. There's the daily, hourly, minute-by-minute, unrelenting commitment. Make a commitment to yourself, starting this moment. It's a basic commitment that only requires two words. I will.
Okay. Okay.
That is...
Mr. Maybe will maybe invite you out to have some pizza. Or drink some Jesus juice.
That is so, like, 14-year-old who self-harms Zanga. Like, that is...
He's combining... Brando's speech from the end of On the Waterfront with Yoda from Star Wars. That was that affirmation. Okay,
he was always the weakest one. He never saved up his cum for his super serum.
All right, one
leave,
more.
Leave the gun, take the alimony.
That's The Godfather, not On the Waterfront.
I don't care. I'm just doing Brando now. Right. I'm doing Mike Cernovich in all of Brando's. All
right, one more, and then we're going to do The Curious Cat. Then we're going to do a pre-taped call-in show. All right, just one more. Okay, here we go.
No place else I'd rather be. There's nowhere else I'd rather be. There's nowhere else I'd rather see. I'm telling myself, this is the person
what
I want to be
fuck?
With. This is the place I want to be. And when you tell yourself this, believe it. Believe there's nowhere else you'd rather be, and there's no one else you'd rather see. When you believe that, using those two mantras will help you develop deeper, longer-lasting connections. Again, mindfulness is not just some random concept about meditation.
Oh my fucking God!
I'd rather see them on a plane. I'd rather see them on a train.
Okay, Brendan. After that, you have to cut in the audio drop of John C. Reilly going.
Wanna hear a poem I wrote?
You know, I think I done finally realized.
I love you. Yes, I am. You love me. Going down the sugar tree. We'll go down the sugar tree and see lots of bees. Playing. Yes, but the bees won't sting because you love them.
That's fucking great, man. Did you write that?
Yeah. I write songs, too.
Wow.
I'm still working on that. Hey, Jack.
Because I love you.
If you are saying that you'll never eat green eggs in hand, you are denying yourself an experience. Say to yourself, I'll try it, and if it's not good, I'll be okay with it. I will find the Lorax today.
Oh my God,
he's so fucking
good. Oh, that's so good. We're gonna have to revisit this in a future day.
Yeah, that's cool. My God. That's guaranteed content gold. For
that's
as
there's
long
5 hours of this, by the way, on my hard drive.
Oh man, I know what I'm doing on my flight to Vegas, boys.
Oh my
flight
God.
Next week.
Sorry, when he said mindfulness isn't just some concept, I lost it. Holy shit.
Master, fucking
oh,
master.
God, I love him. He's so fucking good.
I'm starting to understand that he's able to make a living at this. Because if you listen to that and you think it's like actually insightful and meaningful, you could probably buy like enchanted beans from him if he sold them to you.
Yeah. Oh my God. How many times a day do you think people who bought this book fall for the dropped you your pocket gag?
I remember yesterday when you skipped to a random one, Will, he was at some point where he was going like, just talk to yourself. I'm laying down. I'm listening to my own audiobook.
Oh, my God.
He was like, just be aware of your surroundings. He's like, I'm in bed right now. I have my headphones on. I'm listening to an audiobook.
I like.
So wait a minute. So do like what your brain does naturally, only like just narrate it.
Remember to breathe. Remember to blink.
That's like, you know how those autonomic functions that your lower cerebrum does?
That is
just
literally
like basically make sure that they're doing them.
Dude, Mike Cernovich has just reverse engineered the Carl Pilkington query. Am I in charge of me brain or is me brain in charge of me?
Oh, God, that's so cool that like the president's son like listens to this and is like, no, dad, this guy's great.
Who?
It's brilliant. Donald Trump Jr. is like a big Cernovich
man.
Yeah, he is. And Michael Flynn
Jr., yeah.
And Michael Flynn.
And Michael Flynn, yeah, was like tweeted the guerrilla mindset.
This, we would have been flying jets over Iraq and Syria, just kind of blaring out that audiobook at the people below. Yeah.
There's, like, there's something to that.
The world's most powerful military force in history is commanded by people who think that this is meaningful and insightful.
That's so
just
cool.
Just think about what that means.
I think Brendan's idea, though, about having the PSYOP division blare it over Syria, like, you know what? If you're the type of person that would join ISIS, this would also probably appeal to you.
Oh, that's absolutely true.
And get you away from ISIS?
Yeah. And it'd be like, well, there's no more
the
caliphate.
Same guys, right? Like the guys who join ISIS are like the European Muslim versions of the dipshits who show up at like Proud Boy rallies.
Exactly. Exactly. They're loser, socially dislocated males from a dominant group, and they see like a group of people that they think scares people, whether it's ISIS or the Proud Boys, and they're like, oh, well, at least, you know, they're right. I wouldn't have been a loser if I was in the Holy Roman Empire, or I wouldn't have been a loser if I lived in the Caliphate, but now I get to do that. And in both events, they just get owned constantly.
Oh man, that was good shit. Let's get to the listener questions.
Let's close it out with some
reader mail.
Yeah, I think we can do about 10 or 15 minutes of questions.
Okay, cool.
Cool.
Let's do it. Let's hear from you. I want to hear from you.
What do you people at home think?
Yeah.
First thing I want to read, because it's already come up on the show, someone asks, can we expect an episode on House of Cards?
I don't think so.
I honestly think it'd be a good idea. I've developed, after Corbyn's shock upset, I actually developed sort of a comprehensive theory about House of Cards and how its failure to understand the world is basically a failure to confront the truth of history as like a thing, as a failure to realize that historical forces exist. That show, the basic fundamental failure of it is that it thinks that people, individual people and their desires are in charge of what happens.
Don't give too much away.
It'd be interesting to like explicate that by showing it, especially since the last season,
Matt, you've seen every episode,
myself, is so fucking bad. I'm not done yet. Apparently there's a twist at the end insanely bad. I can't wait for it. But yes, definitely.
I've only seen the first season of House of Cards, and I was like, there's no fucking way I'm ever watching another season of this. So, I mean, if you're the listener, I mean, this is my job, I will maybe have to maybe see like just a few other episodes of it so I can have some.
I've watched all of it, so like if you guys want to do one, I can recommend specific episodes.
Okay, and you can sort of,
so
guide
you don't
us.
Have to, like, I'll curate like a viewing list, so you don't have to watch all of them.
It's cool. An asinine show, but I think we should watch all of it. It's important for us to.
Hey man, I'm already there.
Yeah. Holy shit!
It's good to suffer.
I think that's a good idea. I mean, it's another like The Newsroom and West Wing, another atrociously like pretentious and overwrought and like inexplicably critically acclaimed show that's about like, you know, how politics is fucking twisted.
Now there's more than one way to see the pomegranate, you see. I'm a very tricky type of politician. Instead of making a deal, I'm gonna murder a woman.
I do remember that the thing about Frank Card that blew my mind from the first season is that he's a president that motherfucking eats pussy.
And eats hog.
Oh, yeah, he's like bi, right?
Yeah, he's bi.
Yeah, I had a really weird experience where my mother really wanted me to watch this show, and she said I'd love it because it's about politics. And I said, I think I know what it is. I don't really like it. But she made me watch it one night while I was visiting home, and it was, you know, boring and lame and overwrought for the first 45 minutes. And the conclusion of this episode with just me and my mother in the living room watching, And in silence, I'm sitting there watching Kevin Spacey eat out this woman.
Brendan, I'm going to put you on the spot now. You're saying you told me this story, but right before we started recording, you did tell me that your mom looks like Elizabeth Hurley.
Well, that's because you were talking about Elizabeth Hurley, and I said, I don't really like Elizabeth Hurley because I can't because she looks a lot like my mom.
She looks just like my mom, who's really smoking hot.
Yeah. What'd you say, Matt?
Next question before we embarrass Brendan further.
Here's one. Why my man's will say rather like rather? Now I've been wondering this for a while.
Yes,
right?
Yes. Thank
it's
you.
Not a mispronunciation. That's just a.
It's just an aristocratic
thing.
Sort of.
My one sort of aristocratic.
Did they teach you that at Lord Fauntleroy's finishing school for velvet panted boys?
I just knew that people were going to want to know, and that's fine.
There's no reason to it. I don't know where it came from.
Do your parents say it that way?
I don't know.
Probably. That's where most pronunciations
I need to know where this came from.
This will require further investigation. I think it's sort of like the same vowel sound as when I say anime rather than anime. It's that sort of like the long and hard A.
It's like a mid-Atlantic accent. But the thing is that the mid-Atlantic accent is basically extinct, except for you. It's like Katharine Hepburn died and her spirit somehow entered you at some point.
Oh, Matt, that's simply ridiculous.
Give me a cavite one more time and I'll suck you in the face and you'll stay plastered, you queer.
That's always funny.
So, someone asks, if Felix is a 10 out of 10, how committed is everyone else to the Jared Fogle liberation bit? They're assuming this is a bit, first of all.
What the fuck?
Mistake number one.
You need to just listen more carefully to the show. Yeah. It's clear you don't understand.
Open your ears, close your mind.
Right. You should do a film show discussing a film you actually like. Have we thought about
that?
We're
going
to do that. Southland Tales. That's on the docket. That's going to happen.
Yeah. What?
Southland Tales?
Oh, yeah.
We're going to discuss the sort of lost gem of circa 2004, Richard Kelly's follow-up to Donnie Darko, the critically reviled, but in my opinion, greatly misunderstood masterpiece, Southland Tales, which I think we can make the case that it's the movie that most accurately channels the Bush era America.
Yeah.
Well, and I think reflects our current lives. You look at Southland Tales, yes, this makes sense. This is recognizable.
The neo-Marxists are us in Jacobin magazine, basically.
They were dirtbags.
Personally, two movies I've always wanted to talk about in the show that I unironically adore are Gattaca and Lynch's Dune, the recut of Lynch's Dune.
Oh, yeah.
And, I don't know how, maybe.
You could do a Dune episode.
Yeah. I would like to do a Dune the book / movie. I want to do an episode on Dune.
I did finally read Dune this year, thanks to you guys, because I wanted to get your stupid fucking references.
It's a good book.
It's great, right?
It's a great book.
I mean, it's not well written, but
it's a great story.
The world is good. I will never buy that it's well written. It is terribly written, but the world building is pretty interesting. I will give it that.
I would love to do a Dune episode, the movie and the book, with Jacob Baccarat, because he's read all the Dune books. And then, God, as far as David Lynch is going, all I gotta say is this is the water and this is the well has been running through my fucking head all day, and probably is gonna be with me till I die. If you don't get it, we don't have to explain it any further. But holy shit! Next question.
The only Twin Peaks I care about are a set of bazongas.
Next question.
Same. Cosine.
Let's see. Each of you fuck, marry, kill other Chapo hosts. Do you want to do that?
Nah, that's lame.
Nah,
let's grasp
pack one.
Yeah, that's a dumb question.
How about instead of fuck, marry, kill, we're gonna make a new version: anal, oral, missionary.
Yeah, let's dive into that one right now.
I'm gonna be honest. I think the questions suck this time.
Oh yeah.
I think that we have already gone pretty long anyway.
Yeah. Okay, give me just one or two quick ones, even if they suck. Come on, do better, fans.
Awful hogs.
There was one that I thought was kind of interesting about when were your politics the worst, in your life?
Ooh,
but
that's kind of interesting.
I know I have it.
I think at some point in college, I briefly flirted with a kind of neoliberal or just kind of contrarian, freshman year of college, sort of contrarian, anti-politics. That was probably me at my worst. But strangely enough, I was in freshman year, like 2001. I was never, ever for the war in Iraq or Afghanistan, despite...
Indeed, you tried to get out of being caught for smoking weed by blaming it on 9/11 and the people who died that day.
That wasn't
day.
My politics related at its best, by the way. That was my
this is your
moment.
Radical praxis.
Yeah.
For exactly 1 week, when I was 17, I was like, you know what? You know what? Ron Paul would be anti-imperialist. I'm not kidding. That's my most shameful thing.
Oh, I think I like I think
the
I
Charles
had, like,
Charles Davis literally wrote that article at like age 26 though. So
I was quite a lib interventionist in college and didn't really have any curiosity or certainly knowledge about domestic affairs or the economy or anything until I probably turned 20 or something like that.
I was a college or a high school libertarian, but not really. It was all about drugs because I thought it was stupid that drugs were illegal, and so the only party that said anything about that was libertarians.
That's how
so
they get
like,
them.
All right. But I never bought like the other shit, you know, privatized highways and crap like that. I was never down with any of that stuff. And then I kind of like my transitional phase to like actual leftism was then sort of a juvenile anarchism in college. So it's like sort of libertarianism to anarchism, and then eventually I was like, fuck that. And now I'm just a good old-fashioned socialist.
Okay.
Yeah, just like how drugs can be gateways to other crimes, the drug war is a gateway to being a libertarian, which is
the absolutely
worst,
true.
Worst
and
thing.
The thing is, it's like you can't really blame a lot of people because there are so few voices anywhere else.
That's a good point.
Yeah,
it.
Yeah.
That's a good
even
point.
If dipshit Ron Paul and his stupid eyebrows are like, you know what? You should be able to shoot anyone who comes on your land. But drugs should be legal. It's like, thank you, Ron Paul.
No, but like he's also like, it doesn't say anywhere in the Constitution that you can't smoke marijuana. And then I'm like, this man is speaking the truth.
I love it when they try to take like the Trayvon shooting. They're like, it's very simple. If Trayvon had issued letters of marque.
Well, that's his like, son well, now. Yeah. We're talking about Rand.
Rand or
who even the libertarian, even the true Ron Paul heads hate his son, I think, because they view him as...
Well, I mean, he hates his son almost
certainly. It feels like it's time for an intervention on that, by the way.
For bringing back Rand?
No, for letters of marque.
Oh, did I say that wrong, too?
It's letters of marque.
Yeah, but I'm doing a character. It's Rand Paul, who's stupid and doesn't know how to say
that. That's a good point. You're right.
Yeah. Okay. Ooh, flip that back on right, you.
One more question. One more question.
Fuck, I was trying to signal.
No. One more question.
I got to. All right. You're going to have to
wait.
Did
they all just suck?
Yeah, I said they sucked. I thought that was a good one to go out on. All right, hold
even
on.
Even a dumb one.
These aren't even dumb. These are all like... What do you think DSA should do with a candidate who...
Shut the fuck up.
The
oh,
more
God.
Anti-Semitism. Yeah. Next question.
Okay. Where does the DSA stand on the Jewish question?
You know, there's just people trying to be funny.
That's our job.
Yeah, someone's asking about what happened to Frost Crisman. We've already kind of told people that that's an irregular sort of thing. We already did the what's your most kind of like politically off-brand thing. Abolish the police, good idea.
thank you.
What are we reading? Okay.
Okay, here we go.
Will, this is for you. You wanted one more question.
Yeah,
anyone else?
All right.
Carpenter or Cronenberg?
Ooh. Ooh. Fuck.
I mean, for me, it's not that hard of a question.
Holy shit.
Frankly.
Okay, this is like probably the hardest question I've ever had to answer, but I got to go with Cronenberg.
Really?
Yeah.
You said John Carpenter.
They're one and two of my favorite directors of all time, if not, well, currently alive. But it's Cronenberg.
That's interesting because for me, it's a no-brainer, Carpenter.
Yeah.
100%.
That is like the off choice, you know, like that is the odd choice, I will freely admit. But something about David Cronenberg, like, just his films speak to me.
Well, I like a little guy named Christopher Nolan.
We should all go see Dunkirk together this summer and hold hands as we look at those brave British lads.
It's the greatest bloody generation, mates.
They didn't have time to bother men like Jimmy Savile about their normal business that they went about.
Okay, guys. great to be back with you and the original gang in my new apartment. This feels beautiful. Great. Until next time, guys, over and out.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.